Good morning, Jonathan.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks so much for joining me. Now, what inspired you to start Dance for Abilities?
Look, so I and my family obviously grew up with my sister Rosa, who's 2 years older than me, and she's got Down syndrome. And so I guess when we grew up, my brothers and I naturally sort of progressed from school into doing, I guess activities which involved going out and partying and stuff like that, and dancing and all the rest of it. And just even birthdays and stuff like that, we found that once we got past the age of about 16 or so, Rose was no longer included as much. And I guess it just sort of resonated with us. And the idea for me for a long time was to try and start something where, I guess from my point of view, people like Rosa could be included and have that social opportunity. Because it's genuinely regarded as, you know, even for people who don't have an intellectual disability, you know, going out and clubbing and partying can be quite a hostile environment where people aren't necessarily the best versions of themselves because they're intoxicated and stuff like that. So what we wanted to do with Dance for Abilities was create a safe haven in night spots and hot spots where anyone would want to go to, but if we could take out some of the factors which aren't as enticing, if you like, then we could make it more of a safe haven for these guys to come and enjoy themselves. So that's pretty much how it came about.
Yeah, right. Well, it sounds like a really important thing and a really nice thing to be happening. Can you tell us a little bit about how the Dance for Abilities events work and what goes on there?
So, look, basically, it's about a four-hour event. We have a rotating roster of different nightclubs throughout Sydney. We open it up to anyone who has an intellectual disability and is above the age of 18. And then we also open it up to people who are close to them, you know, family members, and then obviously importantly social workers or support workers and stuff like that. So we pick a venue about a month in advance or 2 months in advance. We pick a venue, obviously tie things up with the venue, and then sometimes we theme it, sometimes we don't theme it. It just depends on sort of what's happening around that time. For instance, our next event is on the 9th of November, and that's going to be at the Port in Darling Harbour. So that ties in nicely with the Melbourne Cup time. So we're going to make a Melbourne Cup themed event. And then basically, so we have different things going on at each one. We try and employ as many people with intellectual disabilities to entertain in the sense that last time we had one of our residents, Tim Brooks, has autism, and he's one of our DJs, and then we picked up another DJ as well who has autism, Julian. So we want to get as many people involved from the entertainment side of things as well who have intellectual disabilities. And then we have things like candy bars and pamper stations where we have hair and makeup artists come in and get everyone glitzed and glammed. And we just try and do as many things as we can to keep it cool and fresh. The launch was only last week, but we've got a lot of things going on in terms of preparing for this next one. So, yeah, it's just fun. We have dance competitions, and the coolest thing as well is that we have a lot of people from the community donating prizes and gifts and doing everything they can to help out. So it really makes for a special 4 hours for these guys and everyone involved. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds really, really lovely. It sounds like it's a jam-packed evening as well. It's so much stuff going on.
It's a pretty full 4 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I want to look to the broader nightlife scene now.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
What's your response to people who might say that there should be a stronger push on making all club environments inclusive and welcoming to people with intellectual or other disabilities rather than creating a separate space?
Yeah, look, it's a good question, and it's something we received a little bit of feedback after the last event. It was on the ABC News, and someone made a comment and said, "Look, this is fantastic, what's going on, but you know, it's a shame that we have to segregate people like this from society." And I completely agree. However, it's just a baby steps thing, and the hardest thing is that nightclubs and bars are always going to exist in the same way that they do now. Like, I would like to think it could change, but the inclusiveness factor isn't from a lack of the bars wanting or allowing people with intellectual disabilities or otherwise to be there. It's more the nature of the beast itself, you know, by virtue of the fact that people that are there are drunk generally or are not the best version of themselves is going to make it hostile for anyone who feels a little bit vulnerable in that sector. And I was thinking about it myself, you know, someone like my sister who has Down syndrome, you can physically see that she's disabled. And so that might actually give her a little bit of a safeguard in that regard, because people will have a little bit of, I guess we'll be a little bit more forgiving if something were to happen, if you like. Whereas if someone with autism, or someone who was maybe disinhibited in any way and through misadventure annoyed someone who was drunk, then you could imagine it wouldn't be a good environment, particularly if they're not visually disabled. So what I'm saying, I guess, is that not everyone who has an intellectual disability appears to be disabled. And so if someone was drunk and, you know, they weren't practicing their best behavior, and someone like this got in their way or did something untoward, then you could see how the situation could be perpetuated in the worst way. So what we are trying to do is include them in every possible way, and get on board with the bars to ensure that we can do everything we can to make sure that, you know, a lot of the stuff which would make these guys feel vulnerable, we can take that out and factor that out.
Yeah, well, I do think it's a very good point, as the reality is that as much as venues and organisers might want events and nightclubs to be a certain way, the problem is when you have a few hundred people in there, you just never know quite what's going to happen.
Exactly. And, all, and you know, it's like for anyone, whether you have an intellectual disability or not. You know, if you bump into someone in the bar and someone's had one too many drinks, you know, it can create for a bad situation. And that's what a lot of these guys are fearful of, because they've grown up through school and, you know, they've gone to other events and they already feel somewhat, and I'm just speaking on behalf of my sister and people that I know that have intellectual disabilities, it's not for everyone, but these guys already feel a little bit intimidated in bigger crowds and stuff like that because of their disposition. So if you put them in a situation where you've got people that are drunk, and it's crowded and it's noisy, then it can be quite overwhelming for them. And I think even from the sort of safety factor, we'd like to make a situation where, you know, people who do have intellectual disabilities can feel like it's catered to them. For instance, people that have autism have hypersensitivity to noise. People that have epilepsy, I think it's about 5 or 10% are seizure prone, with the trigger being a flashing light. So what we've tried to do is to try to cater to those people's needs, for instance. So we don't have strobe lights, we don't have erratic flashing lights, and then we provide sunglasses and we provide earmuffs and stuff like this, just to make sure that, as well as the person having their support workers there, we make sure that we can cater to their needs in every which way. So not only is it a safe environment, but it's a smooth flowing environment.
Well, that's a lot of things to take into account. It sounds like you have covered a lot of bases in what you're doing, which is fantastic. One final question for you, Jonathan, is it is early days at the moment, but what's plans for the future for Dance for Abilities?
Look, so it's really taken off. I have a brother in London, a brother in Auckland. I have some very good friends in Melbourne. For me, the wider picture was to try and get it into other cities and try and build a template. So if someone wanted to replicate it in another city, we could have it replicated with relative ease. The hardest thing is just sort of ironing out all the shortcomings to begin with. That was the hardest thing. There's a lot of stuff when you organise this that you don't realise is going to go on in the background. We're lucky enough to have a really good team in Sydney, and I think a lot of people that did stuff behind the scenes, like Nicole West and Maria, are two very good friends of mine, and that they helped out so much behind the scenes, and I had no idea what they actually, the hours they put in, they probably won't tell me. But we are trying to form teams in these different cities so we can get it going in these other hotspots. And then it's going to feed into something which for me is a personal thing I'm working on, which I'm working on a documentary about Down syndrome specifically. So we're going to be filming that over the next couple of years. And so what we want to do is network through Dance for Abilities into different cities around the world and follow a couple of people with Down syndrome in every city, and to give the world a bit of an understanding of the importance of diversity. And it's called the Ups of Down Syndrome. So we want the world at large to get an idea of why it's important to have people with disabilities like Down Syndrome in the world. So that's the bigger scope of things. really. But at this point, we're focusing on our next event, which is the 9th of November at Darling, at the port, sorry, in Darling Harbour. And then we're looking at Melbourne, London and Auckland as the next step within the next 6 months.
It sounds like things are really exploding. There's a whole bunch on the cards for the near future for Dance for Abilities. It's very exciting to hear about. We're going to chuck some links up to the next event on 2SER's website. Where should people go to find out more, Jonathan?
So, yeah, you go to either our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/DFA4, the number four, for life, all cap lock, or www.danceforabilities, again with the number four, danceforabilities.com.au. So www.danceforabilities.com.au. And we have all the details on there. People who want to come can RSVP on the website. There's a template there that they just have to fill out, and then they go on the mailing list. So all the information is on those pages there.
Excellent. Well, Jonathan, thanks so much for all your work, and thanks for joining me today.
No, thank you very much for having me, and have a good rest of your day.